Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Yes, it's only Mark Gailey, Paul!
Oh, well, is it the biggest of fiddling? Up there.
What are we talking about?
Probably.
I mean, I need to say, Mercedes hat. Mm-hmm. You've just bought your Mercedes.
Oh, it's my first motor I got. I passed my test and my dad got us at a Merc. Buzzing, absolutely buzzing. But do you know what's funny, actually? I played with Mark's boy, Tom, at Motherwell.
Yes.
And I used to always say to Tom, you need to let me meet your dad. Do you know what I mean? Let me meet him. Never had the chance on. Mm-hmm. What a day it is for myself as well, Simon, as well as you.
And I was also on trial with Tom as well. Tom came on trial to Portsmouth for a couple of weeks a week.
Yes, he did.
A few coffees, lovely boy.
Did. Yeah, too nice sometimes. He needs to get a bit more steel in him, and I've always told him that, you know. I always send him a picture of a gorilla before the game.
Oh, do right? You?
Yeah.
Every game or just?
Every game.
Do you, mate?
Yeah.
What is it your dad sends you before games?
Naked Harden. So where is Tom now? Sorry, just is he over?
He's at Piast. He was at Cyprus, AEK Alanica last year. Didn't go too well for him. Well, he played most of the time, 3 or 4 different managers in one season. It just shows you that this wasn't a stable environment for him anyway, especially coming off the back of winning a championship in Poland. So that was a big disappointment. But I think, you know, it just... When you see of winning a championship and then you have a go to a club with major disappointment, it reboots you.
Yeah.
You know, when it makes you refocus. I think that's what it's done. I think Tom's glad to be back playing at his old club. Few of the old players still there, still the same coach, same backroom staff. So they all know Tom. So he's gone straight into there. They had a great win against his first game against Legia Warsaw. They beat them 4-1.
Wow, what is that?
So he's sort of not had a pre-season, but he's up and running.
Over in that Cyprus, where I'd love to see Tom Haley in a pair of trunks.
Good, little boy.
Yeah. But what kind of football dad are you? So do you watch every game and then do you critique him after it?
No, I never critique him. He's his own critique. He is his biggest...
Critic, is he?
Yeah, absolutely. He knows when he plays well, he knows when he plays badly. I don't have to tell him. I watch him most games. It was hard to get the Cyprus football on. But Polish football, you watch it on lots of apps. So yeah, good to watch that. But he always comes back to me. I just say what you think, you know. And he say blah blah blah. Boom, my numbers are good or whatever. It's all about numbers now, isn't it?
Yeah.
But my numbers are good. I said, forget the numbers. How do you think you play? You know. And he said, yeah, I thought I played well today.
So, did you ever fling in a wee Maldini? Wouldn't have done that.
No,
it's
encouragement. It's not trying to destroy a player. Nobody's like my old Paolo anyway.
Was he? I will come to him in a minute.
Your dad obviously played. So was he the biggest influence on you when you were a kid?
We're 100%. My dad was a big player. First £100,000 signing.
Was he?
Yeah, he was the first £100,000 signing.
A few quid in the Haley household.
The story behind that is he was at Villa knocking the goals in. Playing very, very well. Bill Shankly approached Villa and were taking him for £100,000 up to Liverpool. In that summer, Peter Osgood broke his ankle. So Tommy Dock phoned Shanks up and said to him, he said, can we take the big man for a year? And then we'll sell him to you for £95,000 at the end of 1 year. So that agreement was made. So my dad went from Villa to Chelsea for 1 year. Scored in the semi-final, played in the FA Cup final against Tottenham, scored the winner against Leeds in the semi-final, and then after that, shot up to Liverpool. So, you know, that's how it all worked out. You see, that was the Scottish connection still working down in England.
So how was he with you as a kid? Would he be similar to you at all?
Oh, my dad was the worst, probably footballing father to come and watch her and be a massive voice, and has always made his voice heard, and he would be at the side of the pitch, and I think it's some kids can take it, some kids can't, you know.
He obviously could.
Sometimes I did and sometimes I didn't, sort of stuff. It was just, he saw the game, played the game, and it was a massive shadow for me to get out of. Let's put it that way. But
maybe you'd have pushed you like that, man. You wouldn't have the kid that you had.
Yeah, listen, he had me doing all sorts of stuff. I was modelling myself on him when I was 4 or 5, doing press-ups, sit-ups, you know, at home at that age. And, you know, never bought me a bike because they said, if you want to be a footballer, you need to run everywhere. So I had to run everywhere to play football with my pals. They all had bikes. I had a bike for literally 3 months when I was 15, and then it got stolen. And that was
he's
me.
Got somebody to steal that, don't he?
Well, I don't know. It was in Liverpool, so it could have probably could probably be stolen.
Did you struggle with that, though, as a kid? Was it a bit too much at times?
Yeah, as a kid, you want what your pals have got. You know, if they're running around on bikes and all that sort of stuff, it's fair to say that I could have got a bike and so I can keep up with them. But we had many runs in, my dad and myself, on his theories and what have you. But I can say that probably helped me a great deal about the running situation and the physical side of being a young man into my game. My game was fitness and you know, I could run all day. So that was down to my youth, basically.
Your dad, yeah.
I'm obsessed with that.
How dads are with ourselves.
Arguments. I mean, obviously, with Frank Lampard, said his dad was really hard on him, but you look at the career he's had, Tiger Woods as well, his dad was maybe a bit much, but see if they maybe won the lap, would they have went to the heights?
Driven. They're all driven.
Yeah. Listen, every great's had a dad like that, but most of them haven't they?
Yeah, yeah. Well, Paolo Maldini is the same. Paolo's dad was the same position as him at Milan. That's why we had a real good connection when I joined Milan. Paolo used to come with us in a car and learn his English and all that sort of stuff. And he knew my background. My dad was centre forward. I was a centre forward. He was still really good friends right now. You know, he's doing the same job as me when I was working at Rangers as a business development. Now he's sporting director. He's gone on to that level. But we talk a lot through the WhatsApp and
we send a selfie to him.
Two absolute gorgeous guys as well.
Absolutely,
Do you know, see, it was funny, my dad last night was telling me that, and I don't know if it's true, had a few drinks in him, that, was it right that Brian Clough knocked you back?
Yes.
My dad, I was seeing him, I was doing the interview, and he was telling me a few stories, but
there's a good story in the book about that.
Oh, is there?
No, he told you?
Can you use a wee snippet?
Yeah, he just told me he'd never be a footballer.
Who, Brian Clough did?
He did indeed. It was 9 o'clock in the morning. He might have been pissed out of his head. So there you go.
So and how did that make you? How did that make you feel? Did that not give confidence?
No, that made me angry.
Was he Brian Clough at the time?
Oh, I just won a
European Cup
and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, that was all, you know, Martin O'Neill and all that crew.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'd had a good pre-season, left school, scored a couple of goals in bounce games, always tall, very skinny. And yeah, just not had that, you know, that time where you end of pre-season when you have to go and knock on the door, and that's where the story will finish. So read about it.
Wow. And then you went to Coventry after that.
Yeah.
So did Clough sell you, or was it a free transfer?
No. I was still on a trial. I was still a trialist.
Right. Then,
and I went over to Coventry. Gordon Milne, a good friend of my dad from the Liverpool days, and a mad assistant, Ronnie Wiley.
How wild are we talking?
Oh, mad Scotsman. Oh, you know, a wee mad Scotsman. He waited 10 years to break somebody's leg. Ronnie Wiley did. Yeah, somebody broke his leg, and he waited 10 years.
And got him back?
Got him back, yeah. I won't tell you who the player was, but he was a big player.
And what would he be the one that would be on the other team?
Yeah, listen, Ronnie was driven. He was driven. Gordon Milne was the calm guy, and it was a club... Joe Mercer was there, great man. And then Jimmy Hill became chairman. Very visionary, first all stadium, Highfield Road and all that sort of stuff. partnership with American Football Club, Detroit Express. All the young players went out there in the summer, had a fantastic time, learned how to play the game. You know, played against Beckenbauer and Pelé and all these sort of players.
So you did?
Yeah, yeah.
And oh my. George Best. So you were centre forward, Beckenbauer's up your ass?
Yeah, they really speak to you. They would speak to you as a good pro. And you know, I was 18 when I went out to play for that summer. So I finished, just got into the first team at Coventry, and then gone out and played through, came back in the October when that season finished. So back into the Football League when that was up and running again. But all those sort of players that you play against when you are a young lad, if there are anything of a good sort, if you know what I mean, they're always talking to you. You know, if you was just to stand just this, honestly, like that, just stand there, it would make my job a lot harder. You know, so this is that, and that's, and
is that where you Detroit, really learned the game, would you say?
Yeah,
in Detroit?
Yeah. Detroit, no. I properly learned the game when I went to Milan. But these sort of players that you play against in when you're 16 and 17, you know, that's there. If you want to learn, then you're learning from the very, very best, you know.
What were you like when you were a kid? When you went into and trained with sort of first team players, are they big names? Were you confident that you belonged there?
Yeah, because I was always tall. Right. When I was 11, 12, I was like 5'10", 5'11", but like a drink of water. It was like, you know, real, real skinny. But I had always had that. I was never afraid to tackle men, you know, or being in amongst it sort of stuff. So, yeah, that helped me a lot. What my dad had taught me is, as an old-fashioned centre-forward, you know, using your body well. Using your limbs well, should we say. Taught me how to head a ball, you know, as a 6-7 year old. I was all sorts of stuff, slide tackling on concrete posts in a garden. Yeah, that's what he would get me doing. Just putting a ball against one of these slabs that on the floor and just banging into it sort of stuff and perfecting that. And that, honestly, when I was at Coventry, Gordon Milne moved on, Dave Sexton came in, and then Dave Sexton, he was great with kids. He was doing all this learning slide tackles and all that people don't talk about, you know, the art of a tackle. Just, you know, that sort of stuff. Make sure you're heard on the pitch. Dave Sexton would send kids away and stand on hills, you know, if we're training with the first team. Yeah, he said, I can't hear you. Go and stand on that hill for 20 minutes and scream.
Scream.
Literally like that. Make yourself heard.
Wow.
That's what you need to be doing. It's true, 100%.
Yeah, important parts of the game, aren't they?
That's the biggest part of the game, being heard. Right? Yeah. Frightening people into passing you the ball.
Kids don't do that.
No,
I couldn't deal with that pressure, right? I know that wasn't, but if your dad was on you, could you? Was your dad like that?
No, my dad was not like that, no. That's probably why we're bums and he's
What made you leave Coventry for Portsmouth? They were
the greatest club in England, Portsmouth.
Well, this is what caught me, because when you went, obviously you tipped the next Mark Healy, didn't you? You failed a lot, you didn't live up to it.
It's just so hard to live up to the expectations.
it was a big decision for me, because I had a couple of first division, and it was like the old first 1, 2, 3, 4 division, so there's a couple of first division clubs that wanted me. I didn't think they would be the right club for me at that particular age. Portsmouth came to me, Bobby Campbell, ex-Chelsea manager, he was bringing them through the league. So we had some really good players. Had Neil Webb there, Kevin Dillon, Alan Knight, goalkeeper.
Knight, he was still there when I was there, what a guy.
Mad as a hatter, as most goalkeepers are, yeah. He sort of taught me into it, you know. I want you to be my number nine, you know, and that's what sold it for, because I wanted to be a centre forward. When I was at Coventry, I was playing left wing, centre forward, because they had Mick Ferguson and they had Gary Thompson, and I was a year behind Gary Thompson, so those two were in front of me all the time. So I wanted to prove to myself that I was that centre forward, and I wanted to take a step back. I didn't need to take a step back. I could have stayed where I was, but for me, it was Bobby Campbell selling it to me as my number nine. Yeah. And Alan Biley that was there at Portsmouth, great little Rod Stewart lookalike, journeyman, played for Everton, Derby and all that sort of, scored lots of goals as well. He was the experienced one, so we had the little and large combo, which was, it was brilliant for me, you know. And then I had Kevin Dillon and Neil Webb and all those sort of players, created players in the middle of the park. And it was boom from.
I guess Frank Park, big man.
Yeah, fantastic. Oh. One of the best. One of the best atmospheres. Stadium atmospheres to play in.
You'd shite yourself.
I refuse to go there, but
just because they're so close to the pitch, mate, and the noise that they create. It's even like 2 meters, it's like this.
Are they a type that?
I don't think that you're going to say hard to please.
Hard to please.
Yeah. I think if you're on a bit for Portsmouth fans, they'll
listen. If any player runs around, that's all football fans want to see. They want to see commitment, and that's all. That's what the game's all about. I run around, kick people, and put the ball, you know, in positions for other people to score goals when the chance came around. But
that's all
fans want to see. 100% effort.
Does that change as a player, that when you get to that, fans, do you feel
that was the problem. I thought boys were slide tackling and all that just when they didn't really need to do it, just to kind of get the frat and part. So it does work both ways, but I get what you're saying. Mm. But how do you end up getting a call up for the England squad in the second division?
Good question. I was on the radar. And normally when you're on the international, you played on the under-18s.
Under-19s.
But you get on that radar. I played at youth level, under-17s, won a Youth World Cup with that group of players.
Did you?
So that group of players then went on to the under-21s. We won that. Under-21s, last under-21 side still to win it. That was back in
80.
You
won the World Cup?
The European Championship, the under-21s.
Why did Dan tell you about that?
So, it was crazy. It was like a three-month period of playing, finishing, sort of coming into the end of the season at Portsmouth with 24 goals in 31 games or something. And then coming off the back of winning the under-21 final in Sheffield, scoring a belter against Spain 2-1 on that one, and then getting a phone call to you know, the triangular tournament that was at Wembley every summer, to be in and amongst it from just basically from the under-21 setup. I got into that thinking I was going to get 5 minutes, and I did. I got 5 minutes here and 5 minutes there, 5 minutes against Russia. So, you know, I'd got my three caps from playing at second division. So booked the holiday off to Magaluf, you know, and just about 4 days.
Any stories for Magaluf?
No. Then Bobby Robson phones me up and says, you're coming to South America with the team. We're playing Uruguay, Brazil, and Chile. And it just, that 3 months went from boom, 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 boom to madness, because in that short space of time, obviously the Brazil game, playing in that, getting a call up for that, and circumstances and being in the right place at the right time. It's you know, it's an incredible thing, but it is so true, I think, in sport especially. Centre forward got injured. Bobby Robson came to me the day before, put me his arm around me, said, you're playing tomorrow. Okay, so I went, right, great, let's go. So, you know, John Barnes scores that worldie.
What were you playing in that game?
I scored the winner. No, nobody ever remembers
then
that.
Was that her?
No. But that's the goal that got me a move to Milan from, as I say, second division Portsmouth. So it all happened within, boom, 2 months.
Because what made Bobby Robson so iconic is so special, because every time you speak to somebody like he's his icon, he's a legend. What made him so special?
He trusted all his players. And once you have that trust with your players and management, you have a special bond. I mean, Don Howe was a real good coach, and he was his number two.
Right.
And Bobby was sort of the motivator, you know, very sympathetic, arms around you and all that sort of stuff. He was, you know, he could drop you, right? And I got dropped after two games in Mexico, the World Cup in Mexico. But he literally, as he said that, he made me feel 10 feet tall, you know, by what came next.
Yeah.
Which is, that's...
They're the best ones, aren't they? They're the best managers,
If you can't communicate that, and that went through the whole... You look at Bobby Robson, you know, he used to call Brian Robson Bobby. So... Do you know what I mean? You get all the names. Ray Wilkins was Ray Wilson. you know, and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. You know, he called me Tony many times. That's my dad's name. So, yeah, but he was sympathetic with it.
Did you ever see him losing it? But could he ever, like, really go for people?
Yeah, he had that look.
Aye.
He had the look, you know, a bit like Walter. Mm. Walter would have, you know, the that look, and you knew. But he had a good group of players, you know, Terry Butcher and Brian Robson and Ray Wilkins, all, you know, good in the dressing room. And see, when you've got that in the dressing room, management becomes a lot easier.
So you coming for the second division into that group, who was the one that you thought, wow, what a player? When you first got into that England squad, John Barnes?
Glenn Hoddle.
Oh!
Wow.
Caviar.
Was he frightening?
Oh, he's best. But it's on record, best ever player I played with.
What's that? Can you remember him doing something in training, like your first couple of times with England? We
cracked up a good partnership straight away. Further down the line, and listen, I got his move to Monaco for him with Wenger, because Wenger thought he'd signed for Paris and he hadn't. So we got him down there. And honestly, some days in training, you'd be like that. Everybody just stop and applaud him, both feet, you know. But because he was British, you know, that British type, and I think that cost him because he couldn't cover the ground Brian Robson could do, or, you know, tackle and all that sort of stuff. And Platini used to come and watch his train in Monaco and especially study what Wenger was doing. And he said, if Glenn Hoddle had been born in France, he'd have played 150 games by now for France. Yeah, and that's European coaching for you. You know, marquee player, can do anything with the ball, either foot, you know.
And
you build a side. You build a side for
random. Yeah.
Who was that team? Was that John Barnes? Who else was the big names in that team?
Hoddle, Terry Butcher.
Yeah. Ray Wilkins.
Were you not really nervous getting in there?
Peter Shilton? No.
Were you not?
Not really. No, I just believed in myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That probably goes back, though, side to the mentality your dad set you.
Yeah.
When you go into these situations, isn't it?
Yeah. So then, is it after that goal, did Milan contact your agent?
They contacted Ray, because Ray had signed in at Easter from Man United. Right. So he'd pre-contract. They contacted Ray.
Did Ray just come and chat your door one day while you were in England?
He just said, I had, literally 3 days after that game, he just said to me, when I sobered up, I'm going to say me and John Barnes had a belting a couple of days after that.
So would Bobby let you go overnight?
Yeah, we went straight. We had a massive barbecue with the ambassadors, British ambassadors, country retreat that literally the day after. And it was great, brilliant. We had a great time. We had a lot of good downtime.
Yeah.
See, at international level, you have to get that because you don't see each other every day.
Yeah.
You know, so when you were international, you have to build...
Team spirit.
You have to build that up, and Bobby was very good.
Did Bobby have a beer with us?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So were you drunk when you heard that AC Milan wanted you?
Oh, no, I was sobered up by then. Just knocked on the door, walked into the bedroom.
Is it true you only had a towel on when you answered the door?
Eh?
You only had a towel on when you answered the door?
No, I can't remember. He came in and just said, I've just had Milan on the phone. So I just thought, oh, really? Yeah. And I, you know, being a young player, inexperienced, all that sort of stuff, I just thought, well, I don't think Portsmouth will let me go because I've still got 2 years. And that's how I used to think, you know, because, you know, that's, you sign a 3-year contract, you honour a 3-year contract sort of stuff. So he said, well, you know, the clubs are talking. And I said, well, let's just leave it like that then, if the clubs are talking. Then he came back 2 days, he said, well, that's you. You go into Milan.
Did you not have an agent this time, Minda?
Yeah, I did. But I said, I can't be going because I've not even spoke to them. He said, well, the clubs have done the deal. So Portsmouth had done the deal with Milan for £1.5 million. Uh-huh. And all he got to do, so I had to fly back. I left the tour early, met my agent. This is a big long story in the book because it gets quite complicated. But long story short, we was in this near Heathrow Airport, a house, and just battered it out in a day on personal terms, and that was me gone.
So you never even went back to Portsmouth?
Just picked my boots up.
See you later, lads. I'm off to my
This is Kevin Dillon and Neil Webb just clean them for me, son.
Well, did you phone your dad and say, I'm going to AC Milan?
No, I didn't speak to I didn't speak to my dad for 9 months when I was at Portsmouth because he fell out with me because he'd never moved down the league, right? So going down the league, you know, that was a big no-no for him because getting back up to that is a hard achievement. So, yeah.
But that must have been a wee bit like, I showed you I was right.
I've never got my move
to Milan.
That's what drove me all my career, being better than my dad. I didn't want to be like my dad. I want to be better than my dad, right? And that's always been, that's my outlook on life, is to be better than the day you were before. And that's, I don't know if you know, players that play at a level that I sort of played at for a long time, that's the motivation behind it, being the best you can be, you know, part of that, even though when you scored that's in the past, then you refocus. I think that's what keeps all that top bracket for a long time.
That mentality.
There's something in there.
See, if Portsmouth never let you go, would you have just continued going into training? Because I think Harry Kane in it, didn't he? When he didn't get let go?
Yeah.
Would you have been fine with just going back in and...
Yeah. I'd have just gone back and gone and played. Get on with it. I was really enjoying myself. Loved Portsmouth. I loved the people down there. A lot of friends down there.
Have you got a favourite pub? Johnny Russell's. Was Johnny Russell's there when you were
there? Oh, I can't remember.
Were you known as a good player in Portsmouth?
Brilliant. Captain.
Were you, mate?
When I was there,
wow.
They said better than Haley, didn't they?
How many goals?
Right. So see, when you're flying over to Milan, I'm obsessed with this.
Is it
first class when you're flying over to Milan?
When you go over to
the flight, is it private jet?
Yeah. We used to fly everywhere. When Berlusconi came in, when me and Ray were playing, if we played in Russia for England, his jet would be sent for us and we'd just come straight back because he wanted everybody. But that's how far they were ahead. You know, they wanted the players back, recuperating back at, you know, Milanello, the training ground, amongst the players. It was, instead of like a trip to that, and then back, and then home, like all the other England players did.
Yeah.
We were just picked up and taken.
Do you fly in and go straight to the San Siro?
No. Straight into Linate Airport.
But then they drive you to San Siro?
Yeah. No. They would take you home, and then obviously we myself and Ray, we lived between San Siro and Milanello, the training facility. But we spent more time at Milanello because it was like a hotel. Every player had their own room.
Was this a training ground?
Yeah. But that's been there. That had been there already another 30 years before we even arrived at the club. 40 years, I'm going to say, arrived at the club. So that sort of training facility and where Europe was with training facilities was miles ahead of Britain.
And Jake, that's why they were dominating Europe at the time, because
absolutely,
So what would it be like, maybe train in the morning and you could go and sit in your room or
morning, you had the gym work, you did gym before you trained in the morning, out, warmed up all the muscles, then you know, you had the restaurant up there, and then the lie in your bed, watch your telly, own personal phone. That's where Europe was, and that's why I wanted to go to Europe and learn how to be a footballer, basically, and be coached.
Because people think Italians, even if Di Canio first came, you think Italians. I thought it'd just be like five aside and up the road, but they work like you will not believe.
Yeah, they're in the gym. That was the first time I was into the gym for half an hour before you even walked out onto the pitch. You know, they were turning up an hour before training, everybody getting a rub, you know, straps, rubbed, gym, and then onto the pitch to do your stuff.
And double sessions every day?
No, if we were sort of qualified for Europe, so the Tuesday and the Coppa Italia and all that sort of stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of games.
It was hard pre-season up in the Italian mountains. But it was one of those, everything was done properly. We had heart monitors back then, you know, so instead of having everybody trying to run and be at the front of the group, everybody had to train within a certain
heart rate,
you know, so it was spread out, but everybody was working the same, you know, but you know what I mean? So that's where we were with that.
That must have been quite a change, because I can't imagine Portsmouth in the second division.
I kept looking
like
behind me.
Did you struggle at first?
I was, where is everybody?
What, were you in the back?
No, I was at the front.
Oh, were you?
It's always a good runner.
Wow.
Yeah.
Again, coming for your dad.
Yeah. There's a story in the book about that, right? About the first pre-season. And I'm not going to say what it is, but it is a belting. And it was a reaction from all the coaching staff of one particular thing that happened.
Right?
Yeah.
Wow, we need to get that. I bet you read that.
Yeah.
See, it was Niels Lilton. Was that Niels, the first one?
That was the other one your dad told you about, wasn't it? Brian Clough and Niels Lilton.
Top man. Was top he brilliant? 58 World Cup, the Pele final. Yeah. He scored in that. Yeah. You know, and he's a great man. The second time at Milan, ex-centre forward, he couldn't have been any better for me. Yeah. You know, he was Swedish, so laid back, you know. He'd take me for a walk after training, just walk around the pitch and ask me what I wanted out of life, how the family were, all that sort of stuff. You know, just so much time. And then if we had a free week, he would take me with Capello, Fabio, who was doing the youth team. He just started doing the youth team. And he would just walk me through certain situations of where he wanted me to be. I don't want you tackling fullbacks. If you're tackling a fullback, that means our left-sided midfield player can't engage high up the park. So if he's not engaging high up the park, that means our fullback can't engage high up the park. So, you know, we're too stretched out. So I'm learning how to play the game of football.
It's right. Kind of, yeah.
So it's like brilliant. And walking through it. And he'd have all the cones out on the pitch. And this is where we want you to do all the work, because everybody behind you, and we want to play high up the park and play that pressing game.
Yeah.
The modern game.
Yeah.
That's what we're doing that back then.
Yeah, yeah. So talk us through some of the names when you first went to Milan and the team.
Well, we had Galli in goal, Tassotti at right back. We had Baresi at centre half. Costa Corta was there or thereabouts. He went out on loan and then came back. We had Icardi at left back for the first year, and then Paolo came in the second year. We had Massaro, Donadoni, Paolo Rossi for 1 year. Brilliant playing with him, learnt so much from him.
Wilkins, obviously.
Ray, obviously. So it was a right good growing side, you know. So I like to say that we took them from where they were up to the next stage where the Dutch boys came in.
Yeah.
And then I sort of parted ways.
See, Baresi and Maldini, had you ever seen anything like the two before?
Nothing like Franco. Franco was unbelievable. As a human being, unbelievable person. Yeah.
And what way, just how much he cared and looked after?
Yeah, he was brilliant. Absolutely number one person. You know, he was quick, right foot, left foot. He was like that. He was about 5'10". He could jump 7 foot. Honestly, he's the quickest player I've ever seen. The most well-balanced player, which balance and strength going together makes you twice as strong. And I saw him give Rummenigge in a derby game, give him 10 yards, and Rummenigge was quick.
Yeah.
And he was there smoking a big cigar in front of him over about 30 yards. So yeah, that's how it was. He would eat the ground up. But an unbelievable captain. Yeah, lead the team on and off the field. Yeah,
because it was kind of him that back line. Because De Canio used to do was at Swindon. He's all like, Baresi does the balls here, there. It's all about the distance as well.
It was all done on a whistle. There you go.
In training, like
no him.
Well, he would whistle on the pitch.
Yeah.
What's that?
And that anybody that was behind him, what a mouthful he would give him. So if he was coming up, if he was stepping up, everybody had to be in front of him, so he would command that back line all the time.
What would you do for a player like that these days? Think of Harry Maguire and 80 million. Have you ever seen what he's moving? You hear Baresi. I mean, did he be on the strikers as well, or is it just the back line he kind of concentrated on?
He governed the back line.
Yeah.
So you seem like you were learning off some of the players. Would they actually, was it just the stuff they were doing on the pitch? You see different for other players you played with? Or did they actually talk to you about the
everything,
game?
Everything. What I was learning from a manager personally, just on walking through things. What he was showing me on the training ground with Capello, that I was learning and taking that into the British centre forward.
Yeah.
Because British centre forwards were all energetic, you know, put themselves around, win hopeless balls and keep the team high up the park. It was a brilliant time for me. You know, you get to play with Paolo Rossi for 1 year, you learn so much. You must be dumb if you can't learn off these sort of players. And I sort of picked little twice those little things from him.
How was it playing against Baresi and Maldini in training?
Fantastic, yeah, yeah.
Would it be match, tempo match?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And would you bash them a bit?
Oh, aye. Yeah.
How would you take that? Would you be fine?
No, fine, yeah, yeah. I always used to train how I used to play, and there's no half measures at all with me. And I like to think I, you know, helped them.
Make them better defenders as much
as they helped me, sort of stuff, you know. So it was, yeah, it was all about, you know, I'm going to say an inexperienced player back then, but with a lot of energy and a lot of physical presence in playing up against, you know, in that time, you know, it was the cat and archer time where, you know, they would be just nailing you all the time. But they didn't get many players like myself. Yeah. John Charles had gone out there, was successful because he was a big centre forward.
Is that Welsh, John Charles?
Yeah. Great man. For Juventus, he'd put himself about. But it's being able to play and being a presence. Yeah, it's all right going and not being a presence. I think Ian Rush probably found it difficult because you couldn't run behind defenders because he played with a sweeper.
Yeah.
You know, and he was like a player that ran onto things to finish.
Douglas used to play him through, didn't he?
Yeah, so he's on his shoulder and going in. Whereas I was a completely different player. You know, I would be that player that you saw me at Rangers.
See the players you were mentioning there, I mean, top players, how were you no challenging for the title then?
Because other teams had better players. But don't forget, we were a young side as well.
Right.
So Massaro and Donadoni, these are Paolo is only 16. Franco is, I think, a year older than me, so he'll be 61 now. They were all, you know, it was all being rebuilt because they'd been down the leagues for irregular betting or whatever you want to call it, and was starting to re-establish himself as a force. So it became a slow thing that built momentum over the period that we were there.
What about downtime? See, obviously, Portsmouth, I could imagine it was a great laugh in the dressing room and that. Did that type of player, can you still get a laugh in the dressing room, or is it very much focused on being better?
I was going to say we're always in Retiro, which was at the training ground. So we would be in there from a Thursday till a Sunday game. So we'd all be staying together.
What did your missus say?
Well, I didn't like doing that. And I spoke to Niels Leedholm about it, and he just said, that's fine, you just come in on Saturday and have one night with us. So I trained and went home, sort of stuff.
Because it was much, Thursday to Sunday.
It was not for me.
Not for me.
So, but it was another way of looking at the game.
Who would you socialise with then? Just Ray Wilkins most of the time?
Well, Ray was in the same housing complex as herself, along with Fabio, his family.
With Cabello?
Yeah, they were all in the same sort of residence, which was good. So it was, you know, take it turns in driving into training and all that sort of stuff. But my that was literally me. I was Milanello, San Siro, home. I couldn't go out anywhere.
Did you ever get a wee glass of red wine with Cabello?
Yeah. We used to have red wine pre-match on the table. You could have a glass.
What, an hour before the game?
All that sort of stuff. Yeah.
Get me to Milan now.
That's the responsibility.
What do you know about the San Siro?
No, do you know what I want to realise? I'm surprised you've not asked it. Quite disappointing, actually. See, the you when they win the league, who was the teams winning the league, and who was the hardest players to play against?
I wouldn't ask that question.
Would you know?
Interesting. Yeah, talk about
In Italy?
Yeah.
Verona won the league. They won the league that year.
And
don't forget, Maradona was at Naples at the same time as me.
Played against them?
Yeah.
What was he like? Yes. Playing against them? Unbelievable.
He was a good player. Yeah.
Could he take the piss out of Baresi? What a battle that is. That's the question you should ask.
It was always a good game. But listen, the first year we did them in the semi final of Coppa Italia.
Wow.
So we did them over two legs. The first time I played down in Naples, we drew 1-1 with them. We didn't lose that many games against them.
What was he like? Was he talking all the time on the pitch or fighting?
Listen, he was one of them players. You just give him the ball and he did magic. That's what he did. There's a lot of players out there. I mean, the biggest thrill for me, I played in my first game in a pre-season game. I played against Zico.
What question?
The names that you're dropping, they are sensational, man.
For Udinese. He was my hero, right, as a young player coming up. So,
and was he as good in the flesh?
I couldn't wait. I only played the first half, pre-season game. So right. I played the first goal game. Actually scored in that game, and then I was first to get the shirt off him after the game. So.
What is he called, Shaq?
Really? Yeah, of course you do. Wow, man.
Mate, so what a career, man.
That's why that league was the best league in the world. You know, you had Socrates and you had all these players playing in that period.
Who was your hardest player you played against?
Claudio Gentile.
Do you remember him? Gentile, he was known as Touch Tight, wasn't he?
I think there's a caption of him on YouTube, Maradona, in a game. Where he's absolutely, the ball's nowhere near him, and he's just punching him in the ribs and kicking him in the air and all that.
Did he do that to you?
Yeah, but he got the same back. And it was him and Passarella, and there's two good stories, as I say, in the book that you'll have to read. The Passarella one's a really good one.
Wow. Much as the book. Yeah. Money's tight for me just now, but I really want to read this.
I mean,
it's
1995.
Oh, for these sort of stories, mate. Give me 10.
Get that price up.
See, what I wanted to ask though, just as for Capello, so you said Capello took the youth team at that time?
Yes.
So could you tell, just speaking to him about football, that he'd go and be on the line? Why? What was it he had over the guy, the manager at the time?
He was calm.
Was he calm, man?
It was both calm. You know, he had a presence. I'm going to say young family as well, because his kids were roughly the same age as ours. He'd been and done it all, you know, captained Italy.
He'd done it all.
So coming in and coaching the kids, you have that respect. I mean, it's Fabio Capello, you're like 16 and 17, and you're going like that, and he's telling you to do things and do it this way. Yeah, if you're not doing it or picking it up from that,
you've got no hope ahead. Yeah. But what about the San Siro? Talked about that, especially the derby games. Have you beat the San Siro?
Never, mate.
You need to go.
I watched the Milan derby. What a game it was. Yeah. Did they still share it? I thought it was toxic.
Milan have been trying to get out of that stadium for the last 6 or 7 years.
Do they hate each other? Is it proper hatred, though?
Proper hatred. Proper stuff.
What was your first derby?
First derby was 5-6 games into my career. This is how you know certain times, certain events in a player's career, and I was fortunate to be able to do it pretty early in the career, you know, like scoring against the biggest rivals and all that.
And that
comes in on the derby game, the fifth game in, playing up. It's like all the planets aligning themselves again to come in line, sort of stuff, and you know. Colavotti, ex centre half, who jumped ship from Milan, international captain as well. He jumped ship when Milan went down the leagues, and he joined Inter.
Wow.
So he was playing for Inter that day.
And you scored the Inter?
Yeah, I scored the winning goal.
Talk us through the goal, come on.
Oh, it's just a ball into the box.
Just a ball in the box.
San Siro.
Yes, a ball into the box and just typical Haitley header.
Yeah. Was it, mate?
What was Enga? I can't even believe he went for it, actually.
Stupid Zenga! What are you thinking?
Like? There was, I think, 96,000. The only time if you walk out, you go down to the dressing room and you walk up onto the pitch. And as you're walking up, all the hairs on your arms and the back of your neck are standing up. The electricity in the stadium, that's the only time I think I've ever felt that in a game. But you couldn't see any exits. You know, it was rammed. It was overfull. All they could see was faces. Remember, it was that tightly packed in.
Wow.
That is insane.
See the fans over there, they're fanatics, isn't
they? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Did it ever spot? Because there's been times in Italy where like fans have came to training grounds and that ever happened when you were there? Yeah,
ultras run football clubs.
Did they?
No, they do.
Did they?
Yeah, yeah.
So did you ever get a bit off the ultras?
No, we would do it. Or I've got a real good relationship with the ultras. I was over a couple of years ago with all the guys that run it for the 50 year anniversary, the Cura Vosud. They're good guys. But
they don't want to cross them.
They don't want to cross them. But see, once you score a goal like the goal I scored,
you're a hero.
They just put you, that's what Italians do. They put you on a pedestal and you remain there forever because it's such an important part of the history of the football club. Because where they had come from and where they were trying to get to.
I could listen to this all day.
Sorry, last question on this as well, just when I drank fast enough about Maldini. Yeah. So Maldini comes into the first team as what, a 16-year-old kid?
16, yeah. He was in and out at 16, but then the second year he was 17.
And is he when he's training, is he like the best player at 17?
He's up there. He's up there with it. That's what I say. The best 16-year-old player in all my travels, and I'm talking about, I'd seen some great players. Charlie Miller was. I couldn't believe what I was seeing when I rocked up at Rangers for the first two or three training sessions. I said, "Oh, who's this kid?" He said, "Oh, he's just a young lad from Castlemilk."
So they're putting words in your mouth here, right? But was Charlie Miller at 16 on par with Maldini at 16?
Yeah, as a player, absolutely, 100%. He was Charlie Miller was sensational. Great player. Just great footballing brain as a 16-year-old. Yeah.
Is that the other side of the brain that was fucked
like, It's like that Phil Foden, you know, how he carried the ball and he'd drop his shoulder and do a trick and just stand there at 16.
Man. This is what you want to hear about, the big names, man.
We can't go back to the...
Nah, we can't go back to hearing about Stuart McCall and that. I know you played with Stuart McCall.
What about side can I just...
Slider McCall.
There's been one name that's been in a town for Berlusconi. That's what I'm crazy.
He's a Berlusconi, Scorey.
Scorey?
No, there's one in the book. I'm not going to tell you what it is, but...
you
need to read the book.
What was he like as a guy when you first met him?
I had a real good conversation with him.
Did you?
And that's all I'm going to say.
Oh, I know what it's about.
Yeah, I was like 22 years old and this guy comes in and I just told him exactly how it was.
Did you?
No, I did.
Did you ever get a night out with him? Because he
up at his mansion.
No way. Oh. So who's that?
Yeah, I'm not telling you.
Oh, is this the story that's in the book?
Yeah, there's loads of these in the book.
Need the book right here, right now. I'm going to flip.
But it was weird because my dad was in Berlusconi, didn't he give Capello the job, did he?
Yeah.
Why not?
Why did he not give him the job?
He came in and Fabio got the job literally five games before the end of the season and when I left in my last season.
Right.
He came in and then he got that job. But it's a good story.
Right, last one on Berlusconi. Yeah,
all I'm going to say is he interviewed all the players.
But who should get it?
But the players were coming in and out in 5 minutes. I was in for 45 minutes with him.
Was it just you and him or was there somebody else?
Yeah, he had his boys around him.
Did he?
Yeah, he always had his boys around him.
Would he ever come in the dressing room? After a game or before a game?
Every game he'd come in and pick the team.
No! And what's your manager doing? Just taking it?
Read about it.
You're not going to say it, are you, though?
No.
I'm not taking it for
Read about it.
What's the date again the book comes out?
25th of November.
That's my birthday.
There you go. That's what I'm getting you. I'm going to get you.
Please.
I'll bring it to the podcast.
That's unbelievable.
Yes.
Great story.
I'll get your boys a signed copy.
Oh, what a man. But you were England's main striker.
I don't like
But this guy's killing us. Oh, you don't know what? Do you want to know any more about Milan?
I can't read the books. I don't want to kill it, but that was sensational stuff. It really was. I've never heard Milan back in the day. Oof.
It's a Gary Lineker that kind of affected you. For being the main striker at England.
No, Gary played. I mean, I was in the team before Gary, and then Gary came in as that goal scorer because Gary was the goal scorer. You know, I was a creator, and it was just 86. We went there. It was when you remember Gary broke his wrist. He broke a wrist.
Oh no, that's Gary.
In the build up to the 86 World Cup, he fractured his wrist, and we played against Canada. I'd scored with. Scored in that game 1-0. We beat Canada 1-0. Then we went to Los Angeles and we played Mexico and we won 3-1. I scored two in that game. Right, so I'd scored three goals going into the World Cup where Gary had been out with broken wrist. And then we drew with Portugal and Morocco in the first two games. And I got left out of the side to play a different system where Peter Beardsley came in. Gary came, we played in those first two games, but he was a little bit off his game.
Right.
He had a couple of real good chances that could have won us both games, which would have been a completely different story for me going forward. So I only played in the first two games of that World Cup and then got that arm from Bobby Robson. We're going to play a different system. Peter Beardsley was coming to come in, and the rest is history.
Did Beardsley go play off for Lineker?
Yeah, he sort of did that floater. Yeah. You know, the floating, the 10, sort of stuff. And then Gary went on and got the golden boot that year. Wow. So just, it was...
It's like you said about time and places, isn't it?
Yeah.
Could you know where the 86 World Cup was? Yeah.
Handy God.
Do you know what it was, though? What country?
Begins with an, again, begins with an M.
Wow, this guy's never mind.
Begins with an M. Italian, ain't it? I thought you were talking Italian, ain't it?
How do you look back in that 86 World Cup in Mexico?
It was a great experience.
I mean, it was hard. I mean, I lost just over 1 stone in weight in the first game. It was hot and altitude, all that sort of stuff. It was a great place to go. You know, everybody wants to play in a World Cup as a young footballer's dream. It was onwards and upwards after that. I never sort of lurched around and being dropped and all that sort of stuff. I just wanted to get back and get back on it.
A stone a game to, we need to take Kev Kyle over there for 10 games, isn't it?
Kev,
so talk me through a hand of God. Can you see the hand of God through where you're sitting on the bench?
Yeah.
But so was the bench in the middle of the pitch?
Yes, everybody saw it.
So the ball comes looping over?
Yeah, you saw this hand come up and it just went whoop. But I brain Peter Shilton, because Peter Shilton should have knocked his block off as a goalkeeper. What did you do? You try and nullify your opposition's best player or best asset. And that was an ideal opportunity. He could have punched the ball. He could have took his head off. You know, he could have completely...
Were you just going mental in the changing room after it?
Yeah. He was going mental on the touchline.
But see, when it happens, though, you all going to each other saying that it's a free kick, or did you?
Yeah, it's a free kick. We thought that we saw the linesman, and he ran over to the linesman, sort of stuff, and the referee's just given a goal. So that's how it happened, as quickly as that. But everybody, I would say, 95% of everybody that was in that stadium saw the handball. Where was VAR when you need it?
Yeah.
Did anybody pull him up though after the game? Maradona.
I'm sure I've read that somebody was at Terry Butch and somebody got a P test on after it and they said, did you handball it?
I'm not. There's a lot of stories around that.
That time. Yeah. Did you ever pull them after the game or tunnel or?
No, not really.
No.
No.
You'd be fuming, wouldn't you?
It must be heartbreaking to go to a tournament with that. Obviously, scores one of the best goals in the history of the game, but. Still with a handball, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a disappointment. It's always a disappointment to get cheated out of something, you know, but that's the game.
Well, have you ever seen anybody play at that level, though? Because that tournament is the best I've ever seen.
Oh, listen, he was the most talented one-footed player I've ever seen in my life, you know. What he could do with one, most people couldn't do with two. You know, it was sensational.
See, if you never, obviously it's hindsight now, but if you never scored that goal and England win that game, do you think that team could have won the World Cup?
England team? Yeah. I do. And because we had, Gary was scoring the goals, we had a formation that was working for us, we had some good players, and we had a good bench as well. We had a really, really, really strong bench.
How did the nation take you, and how was the press with you when you get put out? Did they hammer you?
Listen, there's a lot of politics going on. Don't forget we had the Falklands War and all that sort of stuff that was... Yeah, you know, on the back of all that sort of stuff. So, you know, we just go, as footballers do, you put that on the bed and you move on, you go back to your club and you concentrate on the next thing.
Wow. What about your team's performance at the 88 European Championships? Did that maybe cost you a place in the 90 squad?
I think what cost me a place in the 90 squad was the fact that I played literally all season, every game, at club level. And then I played through the summer at international level, at World Cup, and obviously and then the Euros. And I didn't have a rest at all. I was just continually playing. There was not like the modern game where you get the, you know, the rotation and all that sort of stuff. You know, players in the red zone, we need to rest him and all that sort of stuff. You just played and played and played and played. Invariably, I would be playing, carrying an injury most of the time. And then, you know, that... Your body just gives out on you. And I had a massive injury at Monaco in my second year at Monaco off the back of the Euros. And that just boshed me for 2 years.
And how do you find out you're not in the squad? Do they phone you or do you just read about when I get
No, Bobby was great. He was always being in contact and he used to send flowers over to the missus and all that sort of stuff.
Did he?
Yeah, he was. I mean, he was a great manager. And he just said, I need you to be playing. And I couldn't get back playing. But the story behind that is there's a chance meeting with Graeme Souness in 1990 because he was staying at the Hotel de Paris, right place at the right time. I'm walking around with the kids and bump into him.
So if you'd have been at the World Cup, you wouldn't have bumped into him?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, man.
And that's how it all happened.
Fate, innit?
Fate. Yeah.
Right, leaving Milan.
I would make, like, why did you leave Milan?
Berlusconi wanted me out of the country. Yeah.
What, as in a threat, like?
No. He didn't want me to go and join another team. There was Roma and Verona both wanted me. But I'd set up a great rapport with the Milan supporters, and it's like I could not play for another Italian team.
Right.
You know, it was in everybody's best interest for me to go and play in another. And
but why not just stay at Milan? What was the reason for not just staying at Milan?
Because we had it was only three.
Oh, and they were signing Hula and...
Yeah, but they'd already signed Hula, right. Van Basten and Rijkaard. Oh, you know, so, you know, we could have stayed there, but it was only three foreigners. And yeah, Berlusconi, yeah. Three would have always played.
Right.
And rightly so, there were three fantastic
players. You get any chance to see them?
I left pretty quickly at the end of that season. And became Wenger's first signing at Monaco.
Wenger,
what was he like?
Very intense. He was.
Was he?
Yeah, I was going to say he was. When I joined, I would be 25. Yeah, 25, 24, 25, and he would be probably 35. So he'd only be 10 years older, not even 10 years older than me. And he just sort of played at a lower level of French football. But he was emerging as one of these, you know, new kids on the block,
yeah. With
different ideas, different techniques, coaching methods and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, he popped and gave Monaco gave him the reins to take Monaco on a journey, and
yeah.
I think that's the modern word nowadays, into where they could get to. But we had a great side, you know, it's Jean-Luc Etri, French international, Luc Sonor, French international, left back, Amoros, right back, French international, Batiston, centre half, all these sort of players. I played with Ramon Diaz, who was Maradona's partner for Argentina up front, and we just had a good side with a visionary young manager that came in.
What's the first meeting with Arsene Wenger like? Does he tell you weaknesses in his game that he thinks he can improve on you?
No, one of my first meetings with Wenger was on the training ground. He had, don't forget, he had their Petit was there as well.
Wow.
International players, Jean-Philippe Roux, international player. No, he had different ideas of different coaching and all that sort of stuff, which was great for me because I'm still learning the game.
Yeah.
So I'm bringing the Italian side of the game and the British side of the game into the French side of the game, which is slightly quicker from the Italian football, but not as fast as British football. So it was a different way of, and a different sort of technique that you needed. Or was I blending both of the Italian technique and the British technique into playing in a French league? So
what did he say in your first meeting on the training ground?
He just said, I want you to score goals.
That was it?
Yeah.
Did he ever pick your brain about what Milan done? Or did he totally focus on it?
Well, he picked my brain because he said after a week of pre-season, I'm looking for a number 10 to play with you, to play especially with you. And then this is where Glenn Hoddle's story comes in, because he's supposed to sign for PSG. He's signed for PSG. I said, no, he hasn't signed for PSG. He said, he has. I said, no, he hasn't, because he's my agent, is his agent.
Yeah.
So he flew straight down, deal was done in a day, and the rest is history. We win the league, we go to the French Cup final that year. And, you know, it's another big learning stage for me. But that was my only year, because then... I'm going to say the September, I got the big injury against Galatasaray at the Stade Louis II.
I'm going to say this now on camera, you've made Arsene Wenger's managerial career. Because if you didn't sign Glenn Hoddle, he doesn't go and win the league with Monaco.
Yeah, yeah.
He'd be as good a coach as you want, but if you didn't get Hoddle, you didn't win the league.
Can you shoot that?
Mm-hmm. So you can take full responsibility for the Invincibles.
You made
the Invincibles, well done.
Yeah, they scored the goals. We had a side, as I say. It was Patrick Battiston, great captain and leader, centre-half, as I say, Jean-Luc Hectory, goalkeeper, French international, It was full of international players that just were led by an inexperienced young man.
But talk us about, so what's you and Hoddle's thinking? What you, what's Hoddle saying to you as soon as I got on the half turn? Running behind.
You know, good players.
I'll find you.
Yeah, but good players. Oh,
it's a dream, isn't it? It's a dream.
Yeah, yeah, but you don't have to, you communicate up here, don't you? You just, it's the eyes. You know, you do that, and then he, you know what Glenn's going to do. He's seen me do that, and he knows where he's going to put you. Honestly, Clive Allen. Clive Allen scored 48 goals for Tottenham playing with Glenn.
Hoddle.
Yeah, in one season.
Wow, man. I remember Robbie Keane done it.
That's what a 10 does.
Yeah.
It creates all over, and Glenn can do that.
Would that be your favourite player to go and play up with, Hoddle?
Yeah, Glenn... Because I played as the European striker, the lone striker, with Diaz out one side or one side, you know, Youssef Fofana as well, Ivorian. And he would I would occupy a lot of things and would allow Glenn then to come into the box. Glenn, that season, Glenn scored more headers in that season than he scored in a lifetime in his career. Like just watching me and playing from me, sort of stuff. But you know, that's how it works.
Yeah. Did you know early on, if you worked with Wenger, that he was going to have the career he had?
Well, no, I don't think you could ever expect. You could see his potential. I mean, he was driven. I mean, he was never out of a tracksuit. Day off. If he had a day off, he'd go and watch second division German football, or go off to Italy and watch third division football or something like that. It was very, very, very intense. Yeah.
Would he take all the training?
Oh, I.
Every single thing, what, from like we're talking warm up to the end?
Yeah, everything. Yeah. The warm down and all that lot. The
fitness guy.
The fitness guy and physio would all come out and, you know, do all that sort of stuff as well. Yeah.
And what was he thinking? Was it all possession based, like you're going to dominate the game possession?
Yeah, high energy. All high energy. Yeah.
But see, like, we came to England, didn't he change the diet and all that? But you'd have been used to that for living in Italy.
Yeah. We had all that sort of stuff. Yeah, the dietary thing, the requirement of refueling, when to refuel, what to put into your body, all that sort of stuff was done in Milan. But then, you know, that sort of flowed over into the French system.
Yeah.
You know, Wenger would have been all over studying every part of every aspect of football, European. So, I mean, as I say, when he left Monaco, he went to Japan. Everybody went, why on earth has he gone to Japan? Just probably to study another way of life.
Japan after him, right?
Yeah. And he went from Japan straight to Arsenal.
Arsenal, that's right.
Right.
Yeah.
See, through your career, would you ever challenge a manager if you never really agreed with it?
Yeah.
Would you?
Yeah. My old man said, always ask questions, right? Why are we doing this? You know, and I always say that to Tom. I said, and any young player, I always say, ask questions. You say, if somebody asks you to do this, say, why?
Was there ever a manager that never liked you asking?
No.
Because you didn't quite respect for it?
Yeah, I did, yeah. Why are we doing that, you know? Can you play it out a bit more in my mind? Why and how sort of stuff?
Yeah.
But yeah, there's no... If you don't know or you don't ask questions, you never get answers.
Yeah. Right, football is great in Monaco, but what I want to know, the lifestyle in Monaco. Is that the greatest place in
it? It was an absolutely breath of fresh air for me because I couldn't go out and do anything in Milan. You know, couldn't take the kids out. It was mobbed everywhere.
What, because fans would mob you?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. It was a no-no anywhere. I couldn't do anything. I was training ground, San Siro, home.
Yeah, you said
I had a private little restaurant in my village that I knew the owner of, who used to get us, you know, out of the way. Yeah, it was a breath of fresh air because, you know, we was out and about and you could be walking through the streets. I mean, I had an Ayrton Senna living the floor below me.
Did you speak to him?
Yeah, he was a mad football fan. Yeah, or my racing car drivers all want to be footballers, right? Before the Grand Prix, we used to go to Beaulieu-sur-Mer and St Jean Cap Ferrat and we'd have a five-a-side competition with all the Formula One.
So you've played five-a-sides with Ayrton Senna?
All them sort of things.
Is he hopeless at football?
Yeah, he was good. He's Brazilian. He's Brazilian, man.
So he was, yeah. Did you ever get a beer once or a glass of champagne over it?
Well, I read about it.
Killing me here, I need to know.
Boris Becker was in the next building next to us. And he was a typical German.
Is it great to see Boris again? It's been so long since you've seen him, isn't it?
Boris, what would you do if I told you play with George Weah?
George Weah?
George Weah came into the side, literally as I got injured. So he was a real young player, and he was one of these players. He looked at me on the training ground one day, and you think, how is he ever going to be a footballer?
No way, really?
Yeah.
What, because he was so raw?
Yeah. And then some days you would go, wow. It was, you know, it was one of those. Yeah, it was either brilliant or hopeless. I mean, George was a bundle of fun as well.
Was he?
Big.
Did he love the nightlife in Monaco?
I wouldn't like to say. I think we all enjoyed the nightlife.
What's the best night you had in Monaco? Can you remember it? Ooh, or the best day?
You can read about it.
Is that
in
the book as well?
We need to get this book.
Give a few other names, so Senna, Bond, well, Becker.
Yeah, well, Prince Albert is a class as a good friend. You know, all their family. I mean, he's the same age as me, so we used to rock around, and I had 2 years where I didn't play, so most nights he would rock up and we'd go for a wee soiree.
Oh, man.
I'd love to go to Monaco.
Yeah, he's a good
how
guy.
How can you sit with us two scumbags after you've
He always knows it. When you're in Monaco, because you always get that call. Right.
So as soon as you land in Monaco, he'll phone you?
Oh, and not to that extent, but he gets to find out very quickly when you're there. And he says, oh, he'll come and see me, or we'll go up and have a chat and all that. But myself and Glenn went to do a thing for, I can't remember what it was. I think it might have been when Chelsea were playing Monaco in Champions League, and we went over to do something for ITV, and literally before we got to the hotel, the call was sent out to, before you go, you've got to go and see Prince Albert. So you could keep on top of it, you know.
And what, you just got to his house?
Yeah.
Just sat in Chela?
Yeah, just sat in his private room.
Oh, anyone else in that apartment block? No, is that it?
Glenn.
Glenn Hoddle, yeah.
It was just Glenn.
But then, mate, what's the thinking?
Jink Wenger made way a better player.
That's a minute he asked.
Yeah. Without a shadow of a doubt. Yeah, I thought he gave him discipline.
Yeah.
He brought a lot of discipline. Wenger taught me the best thing I got from Wenger was not to be late. Yeah. Historically, footballers are all late, aren't they?
I think you were 2 minutes late.
Yeah. I always have. No, never been late. I'm always early. And that's another thing. He said, don't be early either. Be on time. He said, because if you're early on the pitch or late on the pitch, you're out of position.
Right? Oh, wow.
Yeah. Pearls of wisdom.
Wow. When you think of it, it's spot on, isn't it?
It's spot on. So if you're in early, the ball's gone behind you. If you're in too late, it's past you.
Oh, my.
So be on
genius.
Time.
That's
unbelievable. So it made me stand up on a bus, right, and recite a line in French, because I spoke Italian pretty good, but I didn't take on French because they were all speaking Italian or English.
Right.
So he would make me go on and say, je suis désolé d'être en retard. And then all that sort of stuff. I'm sorry for being late and all that sort of stuff.
He'd make you stand up in the bus and say that?
Yeah. So there's nothing worse than being embarrassed in front of
people. So you would never be late?
Yeah. So I was always on time.
Time of her.
Yeah.
Wow. Was he quite intimidating, Wenger, at times?
He was... Yeah. You could get the red face. The red face would come on.
I always thought he seemed to be a bit too nice at Arsenal.
No. They've all top managers have all got that side to them. Whether they express it in fiery expletives or just that fiery look, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So leaving Monaco, you've kind of touched on it. So you're sitting in a hotel with the kids. Mm-hmm. You're still at Monaco at this time?
I've still got 4 years to go on a contract at Monaco.
But are you unhappy, or are you happy where you are?
No, happy as Larry. Yeah, kids are doing well. They're in international school. The football's going well, apart from the injury. And I'd had 4 operations getting back from the original. That's why the club gave me... Wenger came to me and he just said, this is why we're giving you this contract. I believe that you'll be bigger and stronger and better than you were before the injury, so they gave me this.
How much was it a week again, you said?
A lot of money. It was a lot of money, yeah. A lot of money. And then bumped into Siri in the Hotel de Paris and just said, do you fancy coming? Because this was the...
Do you think he knew that you were in that hotel and that's why you went?
No. I was just walking. I was staying in my residence in Monaco.
Right.
And this was in the Casino Square, so we were just having a walk around. And just by chance bumped into him. That was it. But I'd known Graham from Italy and that sort of stuff, because we used to sometimes used to get the families together on a Sunday and have a, you know, an atta. Liam Brady with his family, Trevor Francis, his family, and Graham and Ray and myself, and our families all together.
What a life.
I don't know, this might sound a bit stupid, but see at that time, see leaving Monaco to go to Rangers, would that have been seen to have been a wee bit of a come down or?
To go from Monaco to Rangers, I think, listen, I spoke to Arsene about this, and he just said, listen, he said, whatever you want to do is the best decision for you. Will be the best decision for me.
Yeah.
Because he said, all I want is the best for my players, right? So possibly you might need a change of look to get away from the injury and all that sort of stuff. But he said, I had the vision of you and George Weah playing together. And that's what he said to me. So I went away and chatted to the family. What I wanted to do, or what we wanted to do, and you know, as always, family would always say, "Well, we'll do whatever you want to do." I could see what Graham was doing, and I'd known Graham for a while, and still pretty pally with him. And he just said, "You know, it's there." So I went back to Arsene and just said, "Yeah, I'm gonna try it."
So did you just phone Graham, sit up, and say, "Right, I'm coming"?
Yeah, I just went back in. I just said, "Yeah," I said. Do the deal. You do the deal with Dennis Roach, my agent. He was the super agent at the time, and it always been my agent. And as I say, I came for 1/5 of the money that
you were getting at Monaco.
And getting taxed.
Oh my
God! So it was all about the football for me.
How hard was that though? Going for, I think it was a 5-bed in Monaco to a 2-bed in Posel you got when you moved here.
Oh yeah, I was lucky to get a Posel. I'm telling you.
But how was the difference in lifestyle come to? Was it hard to adapt to first?
It was getting back into a British dressing room. That the banter, the mentality and all that sort of stuff, it was good. Yeah, I
mean, it was good, was it? Was that nice?
I can bat it backwards and forwards with the best of them. You can ask my missus that.
See, when you met Rangers, was the football completely different? Obviously, you'd played in Britain, but was it completely different for you, obviously, Monaco and Milan?
Yeah, it was a lot faster.
Did you like that better, or did you enjoy
it? It is if you're a striker, yeah. If you're a striker, you got to Milan, right? You could probably get three chances in two games. So you need to be taking 50. You've got to be high percentage. You've got to be over 50% taking any chances. To survive at that level. I managed to get close to that. Same in France. But in British football, you're getting chances and chances and chances and chances. That's why good players that were coming at that time, you know, into Rangers and into Celtic, more so Rangers, would succeed because of, you know, their ability to be able to do the job that Graham wanted them to do.
Yeah. Was there a big drinking culture back then, obviously? And how did you find that, obviously, being at Milan? Did you like it?
Yeah. I was brought up.
Why do you, because you've been, and also because you've been so professional in maybe Milan for all those years?
There's a time and a place, and we all knew the time and the place. You know, you have to, I think, celebrate everything, your life, and celebrating a win. You have to celebrate that, right? But then you have to leave it.
You leave it,
you park it, you reset, and we were good at that, you know.
Where was your usual haunts when you did go?
I was always in Vicky's, weren't we?
Vicky's, where
is? Yeah, down there.
Yeah,
it was always in there. We'd just batter around. The Ho Wong was a good starting place for us, for a Chinese.
Can you like that?
Yeah, all the boys there, all suited and booted. And, you know, it was all, you know, signed off by, you know, management. Just as long as we weren't on the front page. That was the only stipulated.
Could you quite believe in Souness left with four games to go? And no. The title race was still
after bringing you there. Listen,
nothing ever surprises me in football. Right. Nothing ever surprises me. Anything can happen at any given time. So that's why I always say, always enjoy this minute, right, in football, because this is a minute you're never going to get back. This is why you should train how you play, because it could be your last game. You never know when it's going to be your last game. So enjoy it, put everything you've got in it, and then enjoy every minute of it. It's a simple way of looking at life.
Did basically. Did he tell you he was leaving though, or was it sort of out of the blue?
Yeah, we knew it was coming. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, at least when he came.
Strange time to leave though, isn't it? Was it four games to go?
Yeah, but it's one of those opportunities that you probably don't. Is never going to get, to manage Liverpool. Yeah, he did. Graham's done a great forward in the book, and is a great story in it about going to the to Liverpool. Yeah.
Gives you a bit of insight into Graham since he's a manager.
He just expected everything to be done how he, as most managers do. There are most teams are reflections of their personalities, you get pulling out of a tackle is a no-no.
Did you ever see anyone do that and him react?
No, but I'd heard a couple of stories as I just got to the club about a couple of players that.
Can you tell us?
Not really. I'd like to keep that one a bit private.
Right.
But you only get away with it once, and then you never play again. That's as simple as
it's
that.
Scary,
that's how the standards are. But that's how they should be.
Yeah.
Somebody I've interviewed did say that. He says, "If you were soon as mate, ruthless. Like if you were, never done what he asked, you were out.
We don't.
No matter how you are,
and somebody else would come in.
Yeah, I think that's though. Especially at clubs like Rangers, I think you need to be like that. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. All the top clubs are like that. You've got to have an edge. At top clubs.
So when he leaves, did everybody almost know it should be Walter Smith to take over?
David Murray was really smart with it, because David came and asked the senior pros, and I said, well, you've got a built-in manager right here. He's probably not that name that Graham Souness is, but he knows all the players, he knows the club inside out, and he is a great guy. And David just went right.
But see on that, what was it about Walter Smith that the older players taught that? What was he good on the training ground?
He was just a great, great human being, a great man. Great listener, very good listener, and very, very smart. He put all the responsibility onto the players. He'd give all the responsibility to players. Yeah, and then right, well, you decided we wanted to play this way. It's your fault. Fix it, basically. And that's how it was. So there was once you've got that, as I say, respect both ways. And I've had that a lot with a lot of managers through my career. You have a winning formula.
Is there anyone with Walter Smith that stands out? And he said to you, or a wee moment in the changing room, or anything like that?
St Mirren one afternoon, we're losing 1-0 at half time, and he got the kit, the skip in the middle of the dressing room, tight at St Mirren. And we're all sat there and we're losing 1-0 and we're arguing sort of stuff. And I'd not seen this before, because if we were not playing well and losing, Walter wouldn't come in the dressing room. He would wait, 5 or 10 minutes till the players had sorted it all out, then come in. And he'd come roaring in this day, and he obviously, the skip's there, right? And it's got the lid on it, and he thinks it's empty. He comes in and he has a flying kick at this, and it's full. Right. You'll actually see his knee go.
Oh, no.
So but did he show any sign of it hurting?
He just went. And he said, come on. He said, you've got us in this, get us out of this. And we ended up winning 3-1. And that was the only time I've seen him come in and boot something around.
Because that must have been tough for a manager to come in before games to go try and win.
He learned from it.
Yeah, he never did that.
And then he's won the league on the last day.
I can't remember if it was that season. Yeah, but that was his fifth game. So probably if we'd have lost that day and lost that league, he'd probably have gone.
Wouldn't have been the Rangers manager.
Probably.
Do you remember that last day? Is there any recollection of it?
Yeah.
So who's playing?
We played Aberdeen, I think, and Alex McLeish made me look like Pelly that day. Yeah.
And so how does the celebration compare when the league of Rangers to Monaco?
It went on for a while. I'm going to say a good 10 days.
Did it? 10 days on the drink?
Off, on, off. And then I just got away on holiday.
Who would be like the main guys in that dressing room in terms of banter, laughs?
There's loads of them. I got changed. The dressing room at Ibrox is like that. You come through into the dressing room. I used to change at number 10 because it's all 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. So I was 10. McCoist was 9. Durant was 11. So I sat either side of there. Ian Ferguson not sat there.
Did they too terrorise you, Gerard McCoy? It was
a lively Monday morning, I'll tell you.
A few stories.
Oh, yes.
Do you know what's sorry to keep it back? See, Walter Smith and Graeme Souness, were they similar?
I think, well, you can't say similar, because I think Graeme's personality and Walter's personality were different.
Mm-hmm.
I think they obviously both got the same sort of respect. But as Graeme's character and his I'm going to say his career, you probably got a different sort of approach or look at sort of stuff as a player looking at them. But for Walter was brilliant, absolutely brilliant, because he knew he was dealing with some crackpots.
Yeah.
But could deal with crackpots, you know, in his own inevitable way.
Yeah. It's mad that you heard it, because it was guys that was obviously so fond of him, you know, wasn't it?
There's a story in the book about that.
So what would
Paul,
he, would he...
Paul lived with me for 2 weeks when he signed.
Oh.
But I'm not.
What was that like?
Well, you can read about it.
Was it wild though? Hey? Was it wild?
But what would Walter Smith, would he allow him to be crackpots? Because you think Walter Smith, right, anyone acting up, he'd stamp that out straight away, but was there a side to him where he would like them being...
It gave him responsibility. That's what you do.
Mm-hmm. Whereas some managers might go in and try
stop it straight away, and then that just doesn't
just
work. You lose it. So you have to give them that responsibility and respect, and they give it back to you.
Yeah, that's
the secret.
Right, you mentioned the McCoy's lethal partnership.
Yeah.
How did you go for George Weah though, to Alan McCoy? There must be back, I'm done.
I always say this, Alastair was the perfect partner for me. Probably technically not with Paolo Rossi or George Weah or Ramon Diaz or Gary Lineker and all that sort of
stuff. Just top of buzz, weren't he?
Yeah. Right, but as a finisher, unbelievable.
Is he?
Unbelievable goal scorer. Yeah, he was an unbelievable goal scorer. And a very smart, intelligent guy as well.
Because he's link up?
Yeah, he linked with me. And so all the goal scorer does is he looks at the leader of the line and makes sure he's off
him.
Yeah.
In the right area.
He's, 15 yards away. That's the intelligence, and that's how it worked.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, it was a great partnership. I'm going to say, as I say, we're all great friends and great buddies still, as you would expect from that period. There was a nucleus of players in that 9-in-a-row team, you know, of 15 players that went the whole distance, all the stuff.
Wow.
Would it be like every weekend the boys would socialise together?
No, because we used to go do supporters clubs back in the day. You know, three of us would go to this supporters club, the three of us would go to that supporters club, and then, you know, we'd have that relationship with the supporters.
So would you end up staying and having a few drinks with supporters?
Yeah.
See,
did you
like that?
Yeah, I loved it.
Did you?
Yeah. See, with that
side, we have an understanding with supporters, and you know, and then you get to realise how important it is. Yeah, and you have that relationship with the supporters. It's not just people coming up an audience, right? It's just not. It's not that. You actually know people, and you know how much it means to them, and that's having that connection.
Yeah.
See on that with the supporters and how close you were as a group, like pals and all that. Do you think that's not, that's what put the game now? Do you think that's what made you so good?
Richard came out with that, the immortal saying, you know, the team that wins together drinks together.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, you could say that it went a long way into galvanising a group of players. But you had to embrace that, but you also had to observe certain regulations within that. Yeah, we couldn't be doing it all the time.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So when it was time to knuckle down, it was time to knuckle down. And when it was time for a party, we had one.
See, obviously you played the massive clubs, Milan, Monaco. Was it even, were they two clubs, is the expectancy at Rangers higher than your Milans and your Monacos? Or is it similar pressure?
Rangers was high, demanding. You know, fanatical supporters, it's like Portsmouth. You miss Portsmouth out there. Yeah. Portsmouth are fanatical supporters.
Yeah, that's true. Did that stand you in good stead then?
Yeah, yeah.
To go and play for Rangers,
yeah.
Had you seen big just, names coming that couldn't handle that expectation?
You know, I've seen many players that came to Rangers and failed miserably. But you have to have that understanding on why you're there and what it's all about for the people that are in and around the club. Mm. And that's the main thing.
See with that when you said the Milan derby, like you came out the tunnel and it was. And you never felt it like that. Mm. See the Old Firm, was that similar to that?
Yeah, similar.
Can you hear it? We all see this. Can you hear?
I was real. I was always focused before a game. I didn't look at the team sheet. I didn't want to know who I was playing against, because in my mind, the first 15 minutes of every game was set in my mind what I was going to do, where I was going to probe, and what my achievement would be in the first 15 minutes. And it was like that from being a 17-year-old.
Yeah.
So I could hear my 10 other voices on the pitch. So I could play in front of 1,000 people or 100,000 people. It made no difference for me. You're still going to get the same effort.
Yeah.
Wow. What's different for the atmosphere though for a Milan derby, is it really similar or is it more? Because I always feel the Scottish one is kind of angry, isn't it?
It's angry, but there's more discipline in the Italian game.
Yeah.
That's what it is. There's more discipline, more technical in the Scottish game. The Scottish game is, especially an Old Firm game, back in the day, I'm going to say back in the day because it's not so much now, was very frantic.
How was it like to John Brown, Ian Ferguson before a Celtic Rangers game?
Well, Fergie said to me, you'll not remember the first two, and he was dead right. You don't remember your first two Old Firm games because they go like that. It's start and finish, and what happened there? So you look at a recording or something on the old cassette back in the day.
David did a lot of shouting before the games, Ferguson and...
Bomber was a brown bag boy, you know. Hyperventilating and all that sort of kit on at 9 o'clock in the morning, but that's just different things, different needs of different players.
Did Ian Ferguson ever have to tell you about the demands? Because I think Arthur Newman, when I interviewed him, came in after a Celtic and Rangers game, and Newman was like to him, I don't care how many fucking World Cups you've played and you're at Rangers now. Did you ever get that for Ian Ferguson, even though you'd played at clubs like
Martin? No, I didn't get that from anybody, really.
No, because you were always on it.
Yeah, that was me. They're not idiots,
Could Ian Ferguson be a scary guy, though?
I think we could all be scary guys, we've a lot of punch-ups in training and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, a lot of punch-ups in the dressing room, yeah.
And Midwater and Souness, would they encourage it?
Well, they weren't there. And so they would come in and be all sorted out.
Because you said that, they left it for five minutes and let you sort it amongst yourselves.
Yep.
Obviously, 92, 93, famous year, a treble and one game of the Champions League final. Were you the best team in Britain at that stage?
Yes, we were. And worthy champions of the UK back then. We beat a fantastic Leeds United side. And I thought we did it with a lot of style as well. We was always under the cosh from from the journalists of the time, the English journalists especially. So that was a great energy for us. The press back then, it really did focus and motivate us and got us going into that. And it was a competition that, as soon as we beat Leeds it was obviously the inaugural Champions League group stages. As soon as that our group came out, I thought we could go all the way.
Was that the Champions League Marseille won?
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. Were they doing something or?
Yeah. They're.
Was it you that was approached?
Yes, I was approached, and Europe, and they went for obviously a cheaper option and got a couple of referees. And that's a disappointment of the game of football. And Tappy, I think did 4.5 years in prison?
Wow, man! Yeah. They came and told you not to play in the game.
I had a phone call. You can read all about that one.
Wow, yes. Unbelievable. Just in the last few years at Rangers, another massive name comes in, Big Dunk.
Big Dunk, what a legend.
I think Duncan was a real good player, but I think he probably came I'm going to say probably a couple of years too early. I knew Duncan was coming. Walt wanted me to, you know, take him in, yeah, under the wing and teach him the ropes sort of stuff. But Duncan, being Duncan, he was one of these players, young, you know, boisterous young lads that wanted to play all the time. And it was, you know, it was a period, I think, in Duncan's career where he'd come from, you know, the big fish in a small pond. Into being a small fish in the big pond at Rangers. I think he probably found that a little bit difficult. Obviously, the situation with him, with the police incident and all that sort of stuff, the jail. I think he learnt a lot from that. Yeah. Went on to have a good career after that, but it was a tough time for him when he joined.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How was he normally up for listening to older people's advice?
Well, he, as I say, big fish in a small pond. You know, he comes from Dundee United, where he is that
main man.
The main man, and he comes into a dressing room where he's nowhere near being the main man. You know, so it's a hard. It's if you don't want to take it on and listen to what people are saying, it's hard for young players to come into that environment where you've got all that talent with experience as well.
So you end up going to QPR, why was that?
I just had an operation on my ankle and my knee at the same time, and it was a process of, I was 35? I'm going to say 35 at that particular period of my career. Always remember, my dad, never make a decision when you're injured or in ill health or anything, because invariably it's the wrong decision. It's an emotional, it's an emotional decision. And I made that daft thing to say, yeah. But to be fair, I think David Murray was looking at it. Walter was looking at it as well, probably, you know, injuries were making me a little bit tired. I don't know. I was still playing pretty well. You know, I think the offer of another £1.5 million for a 35-year-old was good business, I think, for the club. And that's where it led me. But as soon as I got to QPR, I knew literally after 10 days it was the wrong move for me. But hey, we all
know. Was there another thought of 9 in a row that made you want to...
Yeah, I came back. Well, that's the only reason I came back. You know, it was one of those phone calls where my agent phones me and I thought it's somebody taking a mickey. So I put the phone down on them 3 or 4 times and, you know, my wife at the time, then she picked it up and said, no, it's Dennis Pardew. He said, I've just spoke to Walter. He said, need you to go back, sign you till the end of the season. Took me a nanosecond to say yes. So I put all that, what I'd done and achieved before, and to be judged on one game. If we'd have lost that game, I'd have been known as the guy that went back and we lost the game.
Yeah.
So it was one of those decisions. I never even had to make the decision. I knew the players. I knew what it meant to the club and what it meant to everybody.
Amazing to play your part then in that story.
With 100%, yeah. And I always say when I joined Rangers, I wanted to finish my top playing career at Rangers. That was more or less where it did finish for me.
Yeah. But you went somewhere similar to Monaco, end up Ross County.
Ross County, it was a great time. I really did enjoy myself up there for 2 games. It was a logistic nightmare for me because I was staying down in Derby, sort of going through a divorce and all that sort of stuff. So I was having to fly from East Midlands into Glasgow and then I got 20 minutes to get a connection to get up to up there sort of stuff. And yeah. I could never make it. So it became a very short stay, and I never got to play at up there. It was all 2 away games and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, it was an experience, and there were great people up there as well. Yeah, and I'm still with Roy McGregor up there, the owner, chairman. It was a good working relationship with him.
What just looking man. Back on it, so how do you look back on the full career? What a career!
Happy, yeah. Always be happy. No regrets. No regrets. Playing with too many injuries would be the only regret I think I have now. Some mornings I sort of roll out of bed and it takes me about 3 days to get going.
He'll come and help you.
I'll help you.
Yeah, I tell you. So yeah, but I think that was the game of the day, physical game, and the outcome and the fallback on that is that you do carry them injuries into later life. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Just quite like, did your dad ever say to you, like, well done, proud of you? Did you ever get that film? Yeah, you did.
Yeah, somewhere in a, yeah.
In amongst
yeah, a drunken conversation, yeah. Yeah.
Nah, so what a man. Table. Mark Haley.
What a guest. Yeah. Can we FaceTime Aldini now?
You can do, hold on a minute, I'll get him up for you.
So, Mark Haley's book, what's it called, Mark?
Yeah, Hitting the Mark.
Hitting the Mark.
Oh, I like that.
November
25th.
Make sure you
make sure
buy
you get it.
Make sure you get it. Just in time for Christmas.
Perfect.
Brilliant, mate.
Good boys.